How did inductive automation first begin back in 2003, and how has the company grown exponentially over the years without any outside investors? How has IA stayed committed to their core values and maintained relationships with the Ignition community? On this podcast, we'll discuss questions like these with the people who built inductive automation and the Ignition platform from the ground up to solve industrial organizations' biggest pain points. This is Inductive Conversations with Don Pearson and today's guest, Steve Heckman, the president, CEO, and founder of Inductive Automation.
So Steve, listen, thanks a lot for joining us today. I totally appreciate your time, and we're going to go through a number of questions, but the whole point is here, just to have a conversation. Look forward to spending some time with you today.
Okay, looking forward to it.
So I happen to know you were an integrator before you ever considered creating a software company, let alone the software company that you created and the extent of it. So what were the reasons that you founded Inductive Automation in the first place, coming out of the context of having been an integrator?
Well, I didn't plan it, and I didn't want a software company. But I was looking for software that had specific functionality and at the right price point, and I just couldn't find it. I was forced into the software business. And as you know, it was an in-house product in the very beginning, and then I reached a fork in the road where I had to make a decision, you know, play the small game or the big game, decide to play the bigger game.
Sure. Well, what I'm curious. So you were forced into it because you were looking for software and you couldn't find it. So you were obviously looking for it for some reasons as an integrator. What weren't you getting from the options that you had at the time that you really felt would serve your customers better as an integrator?
Well, we had sort of a niche system integration business. We got all the hard problems that it seemed like other people couldn't solve. We didn't do massive wastewater jobs or anything like that. We did all types of arcane sort of, you know, systems. Mm-hmm. And so I had some very extreme needs, I guess, for software. And prior to 2000, we had some people on board that created custom software solutions to deal with these problems. But that's not maintainable. In the year 2000, I bought the company from my partner, and I was stuck with all these, well, I lost all those developers, and I was stuck with all these bizarre little solutions out there, and they weren't maintainable. It could take down a plant. And so I needed something that was commercial off the shelf, something that was very agile, rapid application development, and at the right price point. And I searched and I searched, and I found a little bit here and a little bit there, but I didn't find any holistic, you know, some complete solution to be able to move fast and provide value to my customers. And so we kind of built a piece of it, and then we built a bigger piece of it, and then we had a product. And then, like I said, then we kind of came to the fork in the road where we had to make a decision which way to go, and we turned it into a software company.
Sure. So as an integrator in the early days then, you just really had this challenge of these arcane systems or customized systems, they couldn't be maintained. You weren't able to go forward, and someone leaves, and all of a sudden the system can't be maintained, and a plant can go down. So this makes it very, very difficult as an integrator to feel pretty good about what you're doing for those customers if you can't have the confidence you've got a maintainable and scalable solution.
Yeah, actually, in about 2002, I kind of felt like I was just kind of stupid and didn't know the solutions that were out there, and decided to dive into it and learn about them. And it seemed like the problem was solved. When you read the marketing, it seems like the problem is solved. And then you discover it's only marketing. Well, what's the price of this? How does it work? Where do I get it? What does it do? You know? Yeah. And I'm coming up with zero. And so that compelled me to come up with something, which is what you've got today.
Sure. Now, you said it started and then it was kind of an in-house thing at first, and it was a solution for you as an integrator. Somewhere along the line, as you mentioned, you didn't start out to start a software company. You just wanted to solve customers' problems. Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the line, you hit on it. And I'm just kind of curious, When did it hit you that you really had something here that was going to be big and that this product was going to do all those things, not just that you wanted, that would actually grow a whole company?
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm not a salesperson. I'm an engineer. And so all I would do is show the software. And after about the 10th time I presented it, I just showed it, and people got excited and bought it. I go, whoa. So it was like, when I was the first sales, quote unquote, sales guy, and I had 100% close rate, 100%. And when I say close, I really didn't close anybody. The software closed itself. I just showed it to people, presented it to them, and then they pulled out their wallets. That's when I knew. It didn't take very long. That's when I knew we were onto something.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty convincing. When you, the non-salesman, sold 100% of the time just by people looking at it,
yeah,
that's pretty much tells the story.
Well, even today, our account executives, we think of them as the sales department. They're not the sales department. They don't sell anything. You can't sell this stuff. You can only show it, right? And the software sells itself.
Couldn't be a better situation, actually, than that. So,
yeah.
So this company, I know you had the integration business, but this company got built really the hard way. It got built from the ground up, not taking on any investor money. So I'm curious, as a business person, why did you choose to build it that way? And why was IA maintaining that status even to this day? You know, I mean, that's something that I find is very interesting as a business model, where most companies in this arena take on other people's money, venture capital. They have a different model for how to build. Why'd you choose your way of building?
Well, we did. We bootstrapped it up, but we were actually evolving. We were learning. It kept us from making any big mistakes. There actually, I've never talked about this before, but there was a potential early investor who had a substantial sum of money that he wanted to invest. But he wanted to take the entire product, the entire business, in another direction. And that's when I just said no and decided we've got to do this ourselves so that we can do it our way.
Right. You know, I've had conversations with you in the past where we've talked about your viewpoint towards our audience, towards our customers. When I say our customers, I mean the customers that are the integrators, and of course those customers that are the end user industrial organizations. And the responsibility felt to do it the way you wanted to do it was impacted by the responsibility you felt towards that community, towards those people that were going to use the product. So I'm just curious for any thoughts you have on how has that group of people that you're building this product for influenced your thinking of why you kept the company the way you have?
Well, it's got to be a win-win-win situation, or I should say win-win-win-win. We got to make a product that we call it the gift that keeps on giving for integrators, right? You buy the software once and you can keep delivering more and more value to the end user. It's got to be a win for the end user to where they can get their ideas implemented cost effectively and in a time frame that, you know, very rapidly. You got to be agile. And as a result, we see the results and rewards here back at the company, and then the employees have opportunity to continue to grow. So it's win, 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 win. And I think that's the winning formula. But you ask about the responsibility.
Yeah.
That really, it was driven home to me after our first ICC, because I was familiar with customers in our Northern California area, but I really got a view of the world at our first ICC and everyone ever since, in that we have a community here. And people, it's like a cult following is what it is. And as long as we keep that winning formula of win, 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 it will continue to grow and will continue to do good in the world. Manufacturing, I've never ceased to be amazed by the ROI on just doing a simple little thing. But when you do a big thing and make some process vastly more efficient, it's the gift that really keeps on giving. Well, that answers the question.
Yeah, it does answer the totally. That totally. Thank you. I mean, I think, you know, I know we both experienced the Ignition Community Conference and what happens when you sit there with these customers, that there's an air about it, there's a flavor about it, there's a feeling about it that really, really, it's palpable. And people come to the conference for the first time and they go, what is going on with this? I have never seen myself such a collegial atmosphere where integrators are sharing with each other. Clearly they're competitors, but they also have this sense of the good they're able to do for their customers and the willingness to collaborate.
And I've never seen that before. Where integrators come together like that. I've never witnessed or seen that before.
Yeah, and you've been to other conferences. I know, you know, unnamed conferences here, but you've been to conferences where there is just an air of silence about even talking about anything because you're in the market, you're in the area there with other competitors. So I think that's a big thing about what you say about how it has come about is there's a responsibility that these folks are putting a lot into inductive automation, putting a lot into the Ignition platform. And that's something that that you've continued to support as you've gone forward with your business model.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, and I might add, it's just a lot of fun. It really is. If you're going to work, if you're going to work hard, you might as well make it a game and have fun at it.
Yeah. I noticed that really when we bought this building here, and I watched you go to town as an integrator, not letting anybody else do it, but the entire system of this building. I remember sitting in the building with you before when it was all torn apart in front of a computer screen, and you were showing me how the different sections of the building would handle the air conditioning unit of exact temperatures, using Ignition, of course, for the entire automation system in the building. And it seemed like you were having fun.
That was the first time I put my hand in, on controls. In years, right? Because now I'm running a business. Yeah. And that was fun. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. I love the business.
Yeah. Well, but let's go back to the business then. And now, not that this isn't also fun building a business, but you've experienced a lot of growth in the past few years as inductive automation has really accelerated. So from a CEO standpoint, what is it like to scale a team like this? Kind of, I guess, what challenges does it bring? You know, it's different than building software, building a team like this. And what are the benefits that you've experienced in building that team?
Well, it's still an engineering approach applied to business. And our organization, if you look at our organizing board, is broken down into divisions that naturally flow from one to the other. And so as we grow, we tend to break divisions, right? So then we hire up in a division that sorely needs it. And next thing you know, the adjoining divisions start feeling the pressure and we have to, you know, hire for them. And so it's this circle we keep going through and hiring and beefing up every aspect, you know, of the business. I mean, we could hire a gazillion salespeople and just beef up just that one division. And next thing you know, we've broken the whole organization because they're selling so much software. We don't have the support team for it. We don't have the finance team for it. You know, so we go about our growth very strategically and orderly. But it does present its challenges every single day.
Sure, sure. You know, as you say that, though, the engineering approach, I think, is pretty important because just like you iterate the software and you have a development timeline for the software, you're iterating the organization.
That's
and there's a development timeline for the various iterations of the organization. And I think there is a real parallel there. I see many organizations don't understand that building the organization to support the building of the software are similar processes, one applied to business and the other applied to software development.
No, you don't just come out of school and sell software. It takes, in fact, that's one thing that I realized is you either get into the software business or you get out. You can't straddle. You can't have one foot in and one foot out, which was part of the decision to form a software company. You have got to get in with both feet.
Sure. You know, as you have developed yourself as the CEO, which didn't happen overnight, it's also this iterative process of your own development. There's a lot of talk about the four pillars. I know that you wrote about the four pillars. And just for our listeners here, the four pillars are really the new licensing model, new technology model, new business model, and new ethical model. Those are core to those of us who work with you in building out the culture of this organization. And so how would, I guess I'd say, when you think about it, what do those mean to you as the leader of the company? And maybe a build-on question is, how have you managed to maintain those core values throughout the years? So it's kind of a two-part question.
Well, it's the other half of the value proposition. Somebody could copy our software, but they couldn't copy our company, right? Those pillars are utterly important. How'd they come about? I didn't just like dream up a, it's not a marketing scheme. It's us, right? It's just what we became. It's what was inherent in me. And in making any decision, I always consulted myself as an integrator, right? I wouldn't do something to the company or to other integrators or end users that I wouldn't do to myself, right? So those things, those four pillars were inherent. And then later, more or less codified what we were doing. It was what we were doing. It wasn't a marketing scheme. It wasn't something we wrote up one day, right, and then said we better start following these. It was the other way around. That's what we were doing. And then we codified it.
That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Now, I want to go back to something you said, win, 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 and you made reference to the experience you had at the Ignition Community Conference. When I remember that first conference myself. Doug, our director of marketing, I looked around afterwards and said, we call it a community conference. My gosh, it's true. We have a community. They're here. They show up. They want to talk to us.
I didn't know if anybody would show up at
Neither
all.
Neither did I. I was very happy when they did. So when you think about this podcast, it's really a new way for the Ignition community to sort of connect and grow and cross-communicate. That's our a reason for launching the podcast. The Ignition community, it's kind of always been a really a huge component of inductive automation. And I just maybe a little more comment on from your viewpoint, why is that? What does the community mean to us today? You know, and what do we look forward to hearing from on the podcast in the future? I mean, I'm going to be involved in doing a lot of these interviews. I'm very excited about that. But I'm curious about your view of the community and what it means to us today. And how does that have meaning going forward?
Well, the community is what Calmetrics was in the early days. Like in the early days, we did a rapid iteration and improvement of the software and the company just by looping through Calmetrics. You got immediate feedback, sometimes within the hour and had a fix out, sometimes within the next hour. And now at a larger, on a macro scale, Calmetrics is no more, but the community fills that function. So they use it in the most diverse ways you could, I couldn't imagine in a million years. And then we get feedback. We have our feedback form, request form, and other people get to vote up, you know, various things that have been requested. And those get rolled into the software. Now, otherwise, the community is the reason for the game, right? It's part and parcel to the whole game. We're part and parcel to the whole game. Integrators are part and parcel to the whole game. So we have a big game going on here. What was the second part of your question?
The second part, Steve, was just, I'm curious, as we look at launching the podcast, which is going to be a chance for more community interact and go forward. This is our kind of our launch interview, if you will. When you think about it, we've talked a lot about thought leadership and what does the manufacturing community need. Digital transformation is on people's minds. We're part of this overall evolution in manufacturing. What kinds of things do you think you'd like to hear and you think our community might like to hear as we bring on guests in the podcast and share with that community?
Well, as I mentioned, this is such a diverse field. There's so many fields wrapped into this thing. We only have a relatively small view, I suspect. And I'd like to hear what's going on in security, what's going on in MQTT implementations. You know, early on, I did so much messaging of memory blocks back and forth between processors and so forth, and that's how you connected, you know, 16 applications to one endpoint device, and now you use a broker, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, if I had that in the early days, right? I'd like to hear about topics like this, or 21 CFR 11 implementations for real, you know, or whatever. So I don't know exactly what to expect, but I expect we're going to have some very interesting topics.
Sure. What's interesting to me that gets me excited about is all of the ways that people are extending the Ignition platform and all of the vertical expertise that exists. You know, when you have people like Arlen Nipper who have deep decades of experience in oil and gas. Mm-hmm. You have people who have deep experience in food and beverage, or these deployments and how they're using Ignition and broadening it out is really exciting to be able to bring on folks and say, what are you doing? And also just trends overall in the industry. Who is pushing the envelope to try and move the digital transformation train sort of down the track a little bit?
Yeah, when we have our directors meetings, I never cease to be amazed with information that comes to the table.
Yeah.
You couldn't conceive of it, you know, and so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it certainly will be. And I in fact, that brings me to IA and a question for you as founder and CEO, because this is really an exciting time for IA. And you have seen the iterations of the software to this point in time, and you have your vision of how it will iterate going forward. But we just released Ignition 8, so let's stay with the present here right now.
Okay.
We just released Ignition 8, and there's a lot to look forward to with Ignition and the company at large. So what are you excited about in terms of your vision for the future, both for Ignition and for IA?
Well, when we released Ignition, it was exciting, and the statistics went straight up. So that was an exciting time. I look at 8 as that, exactly the same thing, because with 8, we were able to go back and make things in retrospect, to improve the platform and to ready it for a new surge of growth. We are staged to deliver some amazing new things on top of that platform. So 8's great. But you ain't seen nothing yet.
We're just getting started.
Then I'm very excited. I'm personally involved right now, very deep research and big data analytics. It is so exciting. It is so amazing. So look for something coming up with that. And as far as the company itself, it's going to grow as a natural consequence of the products we deliver. I'm excited about this one thing, continuity. Continuity, right? 4 pillars. Don't change the company in terms of that. Don't do anything stupid. There's one thing about this business is manufacturing processes get put in and they keep producing for 20 years. You have got to have that continuity. It's not like a new cell phone every 6 months. This is a different business. People want to put in a system and let it produce. It costs money to put it in. Now let it produce. Let it produce for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, right? It's that continuity that I'm just excited because we've done it and we will continue to do it. Nobody else that I'm aware of in this, well, maybe that's not entirely true, but very few people can make that claim.
I think that claim's a big one to be able to make, is the continuity of being there, continuing to deliver the stability that our customers really need in order to move forward with their business.
Yeah.
A lot is on the line when you're running manufacturing plants 365 days a year, 24 hours a day in many cases. I mean, they really have to have uptime. And if we can give them stability and continuity in that area, that's a pretty big deal. Yeah. So I have maybe a final question. First off, just thanks for being here. Thanks for taking time out to just have a conversation. Because I hear all the time, even coming back from the CSAA conference last week, people are very interested in what's Steve up to? What's he got on his mind? Where is he going? So for me to answer that question is one thing. For me to sit down and ask you that question is a lot better. So
well, you just think big data analytics.
Yeah.
That's what you should be thinking
about. I would
think
that and would say, stay tuned.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So as we kind of wrap up here, I not that you have to have anything else to say, but you know, for our audience here, is there any final thoughts or anything about the company or you or your interests or anything you just want to say as sort of a last couple of minutes here?
Well, I'm actually humbled by the community support, and by this game that started out as a simple, just trying to solve a few problems, and what it's turned into, the responsibility is I take it seriously, and we will march into the future together here. We'll see each other in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now.
Yeah. Steve, thanks. I totally appreciate your time and totally appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome.
Hey, listeners. This is a quick reminder to subscribe to our podcast if you're enjoying the conversations. Also, if you have a topic or a question you'd like us to cover, or if you're interested in being a guest on a future episode, then please send your inquiries to podcast@inductiveautomation.com.